Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today on the program, I'll be talking with Michelle Lewis, author of the new novel, Reaching Out from the Inside, From Spiritual Crisis to Dream Awakening. Michelle Lewis has a master's degree in secondary English education and a bachelor's in English, and has been a high school English teacher in Maine and Colorado for more than 12 years. In 2004, as a single mom, she quit teaching for a year, cashed in her retirement, and spent a year working full-time on reaching out from the inside. She lives in Colorado with her husband and sons at present, and this story was inspired by the true events that happened to her over 10 years ago. And I'm just so happy to have Michelle on the phone today. Thanks for joining us today, Michelle.
Thanks, Juanita. Glad to be here.
Well, good. So first off, congratulations on your book. This is your first book. So, I mean, it's always a big one to get out there.
Yeah, thank you. It's been very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Did you always intend to write a book, Michelle?
Well, since I was in my undergraduate program, I think that's when I really started thinking that I would love to write and tell some stories. But at the time, I didn't feel like I had a lot of stories to tell.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you actually decide to write this book?
Well, about 10 years ago was when the events of the book, the true part of the story, took place. So it was probably a year or two into that experience, into that journey, when I decided that it needed to be written down and preserved, and it was also very cathartic for me to record the process.
I understand that writing this book was very cathartic for you. Did you know that it was going to be that strong for you in the writing process? Because I know the experiences that led up to that were very cathartic as well.
Yes, it was. It was a cathartic process. I guess the thing for me was I had the journey as I was living it. So when I actually wrote it down, for me, it was like taking out what was inside of me and preserving it in something external so that I didn't have to carry it anymore, you know, and then the difficulty. So it's like I didn't want to let go of it until I had a place to put it.
That's a really good point. That's really interesting. I've never heard, writing put quite that way.
Hmm. So that's kind of how I looked at it. And I used to have, it took me a while to do it because I was teaching full time and still am actually teaching, but I wasn't getting it done. And I kept doing a little bit here and a little bit there. And then I would keep having dreams where a character would come up to me as I was taking groceries out of the car or something and saying, so when are you going to write that book? So when are you going to? So there's a part of me that feels like it was something I'm supposed to do too. Like the story was lived so that it could be told.
Great point. Well, so why then did you, because this is based on your personal experience, why did you decide to actually write it as a novel?
Well, I was reading a book at the time, and the author, it was a writing book, and the author was talking about the difference between first-person point of view and third-person point of view, and as he was kind of comparing the two options and I was considering, I really felt that the third-person point of view would help me stand back a little from the story so that I could more objectively narrate it, instead of be so in the middle of everything. So when the character, and it's kind of like what happened in my experience too, I lived it and I had sort of an emotional sort of ego reaction to everything that happened, but there's also a kind of outside observer that was more distantly collecting information, learning from it, and evolving myself. So having that third person point of view seemed like the best option.
Mm-hmm. So is it mainly then just the names of the characters in this novel that are fictional, or what's fictional, what's nonfiction?
For me, it's a memoir. When I think of it, it's a memoir. But there are a lot of other people involved, and I wanted to protect their identities, both the innocent and the guilty.
So let's tell us about the story that you tell in this book. Let's get listeners up to date on what we're talking about.
Okay. Well, it's a transformational journey story. There's a character, Mary Lumen, based upon my character, who's a high school English teacher. And the catalyst for the journey really begins when her brother is accused of some pretty difficult crimes. And it all comes out in the public, and she's really searching for the truth, what's true and what isn't true. You know, this person that she loves and who is so similar to her in so many ways, you know, so she's fighting for his side, and she believes in him, and yet at the same time, she really cares about the truth, and truth and integrity are very important to her, so she wants an honest, you know, she does a kind of honest investigation and finds out whatever she finds out along the way, and it definitely puts some pressure on her marriage, so some of this is about the journey of a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And finding ourselves within that partnership. And some of it's also about awakening, because as events unfold, Mayor begins to have some pretty big dreams that influence her and starts to question life in a way that's different than what she normally did. You know, she saw things in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of the journey, her perspective has opened up. Her mm-hmm. mind has opened up. Her heart has opened up. And she has a new outlook on things.
Mm-hmm.
What the cover of the book is about, too. The cover of the book shows a picture from a dream that I had. I had dream journals that I kind of transcribed as I was writing the book. And one of the big dreams I had was when someone came up to me and touched my forehead, and something very incredible happened in the dream, and that's depicted on the cover. So sometimes I think readers aren't sure what to make of this book, whether it's kind of a fantasy book or a book or a novel. It's kind of a strange mixture of elements.
It's a really beautiful cover. It definitely, to me, is looks like a spiritual-based book, and it's that touching on the forehead is like the third eye. That's how I read that.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is really when the awakening began, was from that, it started at that dream. And there were some pretty big things happening around that and in my waking life. And I think through the course of things, I just started to question almost the nature of reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I thought was true and what I thought I was seeing, there was a lot more to it than that. And I was kind of living these other worlds in my dream life. And that was very interesting. And it was also growing me in many ways, because I learned sure. things through my dreams and about my inner world that mm-hmm. I hadn't had access to before.
So, Michelle, what was your spiritual life like before the crisis point?
Well, I was raised in a Unitarian Universalist tradition, which was a very sort of open-minded, loving Christian community. It was very much about fellowship, and it was very much about the truth and seeking out a sort of personal experience of the divine. But for most of my life, I would say I would call myself agnostic.
Mm.
Appreciated the community and the upbringing that I had. It was definitely a very moral upbringing. And at the same time, I kind of felt like some of it wasn't for me, and some of what was being said and done in the world regarding religion didn't really resonate with me. Like, some of it was out of sync for my personal beliefs. And so I was kind of suspending judgment until I found out more information.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say certainly through this process that there was a deep experience of connection with something larger than myself, something loving and good, and not necessarily masculine or feminine, but a connection to a source that was kind of connecting everyone and everything.
That really is beautiful. Now, were you having dreams before this first dream that you had that we just talked about? Like, dreams in a sense of, you know, that meant something, that were messages, that were part of your awakening and your transformation?
There were a few things here and there, but nothing like the very intensive time of dreaming that came after this crisis.
Okay.
There was so much going on with my psyche that I think there was processing that my own spirit was doing in the dreaming and guiding me in different ways. And part of me also feels like there was something external that was also influencing the dreams and teaching me things in the dreams.
Mm.
So, yeah, it wasn't as big. When I start to focus on my dreams, when I spent more time and energy reading about dreams, because they were popping up so strongly, I kind of dived into it. And the more I dived into it, dove into it and explored that realm, the more intense my dreaming became.
It's amazing stuff. Now, what role does mythology play in this book? I know it does. I'm interested in what your background is and how you weave that into this story.
That's a great question. I really love mythology. I've been teaching it for 12 or more years, and at high school level. And as I have explored mythology, and that's part of the story, too. There's, you know, part of it is Mare's teaching life, and it parallels the things that are going on in her personal life. As she's teaching the literature, as she's teaching the mythology, she begins to recognize the patterns. There are patterns in mythology that come up in our lives, and I really think a lot of people see mythology as kind of entertaining stories, but they really have some spiritually significant meanings and benefits for us if we study them. And I just discovered more and more as these big episodes started coming up in my life, I started to say, well, you know, this isn't all so different from Odysseus's journey. You look at these kinds of crossroads he's coming up against, and really he's being initiated into a higher state of consciousness. And I just felt also like something similar was happening to me. And I found inspiration from some of those stories that helped me to get through some of my rough spots.
Do you think that we all will have some sort of initiatory journey like this in our life?
I absolutely think this is the case. We all have our challenges. We all have our struggles, and they're different, but they're some of the same underlying things going on for each of us. So I think that even though people who read the book may not have experienced some of the same kinds of trials that I did, they will still relate to the underlying lessons in each of those, because we are all being invited, I think, to expand ourselves and expand our thinking and expand, as I said earlier. And I think that some people step into that challenge and accept the invitation. And I think there's also a temptation to sort of go into a feeling of being a victim, which is an opportunity that I guess we're not taking advantage of when we go to that place. So my personal feeling is that we're responsible for our lives, the good and the bad stuff. And, you know, when we accept it, like the experiences I had, they were difficult. And it would have been easy to say, you know, why is this happening to me, blah, blah, blah. But I started looking at, you know, what is this trying to teach me? What can I learn from this? And that made all the difference for me, because I trusted that somewhere there was value here. And there was. I mean, as difficult as those experiences were, they brought me to a higher place. They brought me to the person that I am now, and I'm really happy with that. You know, I don't consider myself to be perfect by any stretch, but I feel like I have honored my journey.
Absolutely. I'm really glad that you brought that up about the whole victim consciousness versus the self-responsibility, because I think that this, in my opinion, is one of the core issues that we're dealing with right now in humanity in general. And I would love for you to just talk a little bit more to that, because there is so, I don't know, I think that as humans, maybe we tend to grapple with that, or I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's one of the lessons that we're here to learn, is we think about things in terms of kind of being a passive receiver of what life gives to us, but really I think we're actively involved, and how we choose to look at things makes an enormous difference in the outcome. I really do look with gratitude upon the experience I had, even though much of it was excruciating. Very, very painful to go through, but it's like, you know, we talked about the mythology piece earlier. Odysseus had to go to the underworld. You know, I think most all of us take trips to that dark place.
The dark night of the soul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to find our way through. And eventually, I mean, the hero does return. And that's, you know, I think we're all challenged to live the hero's path. And it's not necessarily about being superhuman or anything. It's about really, I think, embracing our humanity and embracing challenging things and the joyful times, and the way that we handle that, whether we accept those or not, defines identity, I really think.
Mm-hmm. So I like the idea about learning through our suffering, and I'm wondering if you believe that if we don't learn from these crises in our life, or from what we suffer from, if we're just going to keep getting different experiences, so we finally do learn the lesson that's there for us.
Oh, yeah, I think so. There are definitely things that even happened in the initial experience for me that came up again in other ways. In fact, for me, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Cubist perspective.
Mm-mm.
This the the story as it was presented to me and as I lived it was I kept seeing the theme from this angle and from this angle and from that angle, and in the little sub-stories that go on in the book, it's like the same, some of the same messages are being transferred. And as I was writing, I saw that, you know, look, the same theme is going on here. It's a different set of circumstances, but it's the same message. And a lot of that was about love and longing and loneliness and compassion. I mean, there was a lot, and judgment. I mean, judgment versus compassion. That was one of the tests for me, is where was I judging and where was I opening my heart?
What role do you think judgment plays for us in our awakening process?
Well, I think it, for me, well, I can only speak for myself, really, it was right there in my face. When my brother was accused of the various crimes that he was, you know, I judged the other side first. I judged my brother for a while. I got angry here. I got angry at myself. I was judging, you know, left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think something that was unusual. I'm not more judgmental than average. I think that I was just a human being, and that the person really that I was hardest on through the whole thing was myself. And that's been a constant challenge for me, to look at myself with the same kind of compassion that I've learned to develop towards other people.
Mm.
In these, so I think that if we could master some of these lessons of compassion at a personal level, that it's only going to work outwards, you know, to our family, to our community, to the world at large. And I think that's what we really need right now. And I think that's why I felt most driven to write this book, is because I felt like the value that I had gotten from it would really benefit my community, my world. And that was important to me. I've always wanted to make a difference, and I feel like this story was given to me so that I could share it with others and perhaps help expand consciousness on a more global level. I've had some friends who have said, you know, I've read your book, and it really allowed me to think about taking off my own mask and being more real and honest with who I am. And it also helped me to think about the bigger picture before I go to judgment. Like, they had much more compassion for some of the characters in the story after they read the whole thing, because it wasn't black and white. It wasn't good or bad. It was much more complicated than that. It was more of the idea of yin-yang is important in the story. And, you know, you've got the good and you've got the bad, but when you look at the whole circle, it's a totality. It's a unity. It's wholeness. You can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Michelle Lewis, author of Reaching Out from the Inside, From Spiritual Crisis to Dream Awakening. You can find out more about Michelle through her website, mythicheart.com. You really do explore the whole idea of duality in here, and I'm wondering if it really is possible to step out of duality thinking.
Yeah. Well, I think it comes in glimpses at first.
Yeah,
I entirely mastered it myself, but I do feel like I'm on the path. I have more of an awareness around it than I have in the past, and it keeps growing. And the more I work towards that, I think the more successful I am, and the more happy and free I feel, because Otherwise, I think that duality thinking really does imprison us, confine us. Mm-hmm. And if we're really going to tackle some of the problems in the world and create the society that we envision, our hopeful dreams of society, then I think we need to get beyond that kind of duality.
I think that's a great point. And you kind of address this in your book by what Mare teaches her students about choice in relationship to slavery. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, it was interesting how that chapter came up. I was having a conversation with one of my former colleagues by email, and I can't even remember what we were talking about, but I was trying to help him understand that I felt like that slavery was an issue that we have to deal with now. It's not just, you know, in the book I was studying Roots with my students. They had watched the film. We were doing American Literature as American Study, and we were talking about the idea of choice versus, you know, slavery. That Kunta Kinte in the story, does he, you know, that even if you have nothing else in life, that you always have one choice, to either accept things as they are or to resist. So even a person in a place of slavery always has that choice, and Kunta Kinte exercised both sides of that. Sometimes he resisted, and then eventually he learned to accept his life condition at that time. And that was a kind of a higher concept for them, but we started talking about that in our own lives. And, you know, there are times when it feels like we're backed into a corner, but we always have a choice. We can either go with it and affirm what's come to us, or we can resist it. And I think that a sense of liberation and freedom of self, I guess, is one of the paths that we're all on.
Good point. It's interesting to hear you talk about your talking with high school students about this, and I'm interested to know how receptive they are and if they're already thinking in these terms. You know, I mean, this is such an interesting world that we're living in. Kids these days are exposed to a lot of different things than you know, when I was younger, when you were younger. What are your students? What are their concerns right now in this line of thinking?
Well, I think, let me tell you a little bit about one of the things that's important to me as a teacher is not just, you know, teaching kids how to place commas or, you know, things like that, but to really give them a sense of what a possible future is for them. And I do some writing work with them where they identify what their I am statements are, you know, what are the ways that they think about themselves, and what's working and what's not working. And nowadays, with The Secret and What the Bleep and all those other films that are out there talking about the power of the mind, the power of our thoughts to create reality, exposing these young people to that is really, I think, enlivening for them. Because I think in a lot of ways in our society, we've been taught that we are sort of victims, as we talked about before, you know, that life happens to us and it's our job to just try to survive it.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. That's so true.
When you open up to the possibilities that they can create their reality, not just with their behavior, but with their thoughts, that, you know, that they can consciously choose certain things about their lives, they get very excited about that, I think, most of them. And it's exciting for me, you know, when they come back afterwards and, you know, they write their own declaration statement about themselves and, you know, this is who I choose to be. And I encourage them to hang that up or keep it around somewhere so that they can remind themselves of how they want to see themselves, how they want to be.
That is fantastic, Michelle. We need more teachers like you out there. That is really incredible.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's I don't know. You know, just hearing you talk and knowing that those kids are really being opened up to their own creativity, really in a world where there's so much that could cut them off from that, is extremely powerful. And it makes me think about your novel as well, because I think that there is real power in these spiritually oriented novels as effective teaching and guiding tools for readers. And I'd like to know if you have read any of some of the books that are out there that are along this vein and what you feel the power is in this type of novel.
Any other books?
Spiritually, like, you know, there's the one from like the 80s or 90s, Celestine Prophecy, you know, and that kind of tipped off a whole series in the 90s and in 2000 here.
I most definitely did. In fact, it's funny you mentioned the self-esteem prophecy because there's a little piece in the book about that. I had an experience with energy when I was a lieutenant for a while. I got a full scholarship when I was in the graduate program. And although I wouldn't normally thought of myself as a military person, it just things worked out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Spent some time there, and I remember an experience with energy that's related in the book. I won't go into it now. You'll have to get the book and read it for listeners to get that piece. But so definitely that was an influential book for me. Even when I was in high school, I remember my junior teacher did Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, and that was really, I think, what started me on a spiritual journey, because that was a very philosophical work, and I hadn't ever read anything like it. I was like, wow, there are books like this out there, not just, you know, the straight literature, the straight novels, but other things that deal with issues that seemed important to me. And certainly in the last 10 years or so, The Seat of the Soul has been a real big one for me. I love that one. And The Mastery of Love and The Four Agreements, those were very powerful. So I feel like that's the approach I have to life and to teaching, is to strive to live in some of the ways that are now starting to pop up in books.
Mm-hmm. And there is something more effective, I feel, in this type of a book that isn't like a nonfiction self-help type of book. There's just something very powerful. Maybe it helps the reader tap into their own imagination and creativity, and I'm not too sure what it is, but your book is definitely right along those lines.
Yeah. Thanks. I had a hard time communicating this book to prospective agents because it is, you know, they want to know what this book is like, and I guess it's like some other books, but at the same time, it's an amalgamation of different genres, I think. I mean, for me, it's part memoir because I live the experience. It's certainly a novel. It's structured like a novel. It has the different elements that would be included in novels, and it's definitely a spiritual book. I mean, it's got all kinds of different things in it, and it's not always an easy read. I mean, in the beginning, there are some tough times. There are some tough things that happen, but I think as readers move on, that they'll find that the things that come up in the book are also things that can help them to meet and face and master their own life challenges.
Why do you think it was through dreams that you had your awakening? And is this necessary for everybody? Because I think that some people may say, well, I don't remember my dreams, or I don't dream that much, or they don't make a lot of sense. They're kind of crazy. Like, how important do you think dreaming is to everybody's process?
Well, I can only speak for me. I mean, that's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think everybody has it in the same ways, but I mean, even in the Odyssey, there's a lot of dreams in there.
Mm-hmm.
Important. So, and I always tell people who tell me that they don't dream that they do dream. It's been scientifically proven. It's just that we don't remember them. And the more you kind of meditate on that you focus on the dreams or start to look for them. You know, I kept a journal beside my bed. I didn't even turn on the light at night. I would just scratch a few words on the paper in the dark, and in the morning transfer that into a more of a text. So, you know, it's possible to develop our dreaming further, our consciousness around dreaming further. I don't think by any means that it's the only way. I'm sure there are lots of other ways that people have gone through such an awakening. But it was just one thing that supported me. I mean, I guess I didn't have as many outlets at the time, given where I was, that was first my training center.
Is there anyone that inspired you? Did you, like, with the dream work, did you read any books, or was there anyone that you kind of sought out to help explain these dreams?
Yes, most definitely. Well, Robert Moss is a big figure. You may be familiar with him. He wrote Conscious Dreaming and some other things, and he's a wonderful teacher. And as I started to have some of these dreams, I happened to go to the bookstore, and I happened to find his book, Conscious Dreaming, and I was really drawn to the title. And when I read it, you know, that clarified some things for me, some questions that I had, and I took some classes with him afterwards, and he's just been a super mentor and human being, and I admire him greatly. He's been an inspiration. And I used his real name in the book with his permission, so he is the one true character in the book that has not been disguised.
Good. I'm wondering if you were able to reconcile your relationship with your brother at this point, or will we have to read the book to find out?
You kind of need to read the book for that, but my relationship with my brother is good. I can say that. And he's in a healthy place at the moment. And I guess the rest would have to be left up to you, you know, to read the book. And some of it's going to come in book two, which is Jumping the Abyss. And that's a little more of a resolution with it. But you get somewhat of a resolution by the end of this book.
Now, I know you just mentioned your second book, and I know that you are actually planning three books in this series?
Yeah, I think it will take three books to tell the whole story.
So has this story that basically encompasses the three books, has that already taken place, or is maybe book three still in the process?
The only thing that's been written so far is book one, Reach Out From the Inside, but Jumping the Abyss is the next one, and it's what happens after.
Yeah.
There are some really big things that happened after my brother's situation, after the dreaming started, after some other mini scandals in the hometown where I was, and I'm at school, so the bell just rang.
I know, we took you out of class today, and we feel very fortunate. Thank you so much.
Great opportunity to talk to you. So, it's a little different, but and it's a lot about love, the second book, finding that soul's longing for union with a soul who respects and matches yours. So.
Oh, and this is the book that you're focusing more on relationship and marriage and the journey of a couple.
Kind of, mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of. And I can't give you away too much there because...
Okay. Oh, yes, you're giving us a little teaser, though, which is very good. Well, so what advice, then, Michelle, would you give to listeners today that maybe are embarking on their awakening journey, that are wanting to start a journey of higher consciousness? What would be some avenues or some advice that you would give them?
I think this is a perfect time right now to be going through something like that because there are so many resources out there. And there's so many people who are on a similar path right now that people are really starting to take a look at who they are and as a spiritual being, not necessarily a religious being, but as a spirit, and how to grow themselves. And there are lots of books, there are lots of classes, there are lots of teachers out there, and there are a lot of individuals who are working through some of the same things. I mean, people may think that they're alone when they're going through something like this. They may feel very lonely in that dark place down in the underworld, but they're not alone. They are always others, and there's always a sense of connection, even if you don't feel it. So I would say reach out, you know, look at, I mean, that's the title of the book. That's what I was doing, reaching out from the inside. So I would say, you know, find that support, find people, get on the internet. I mean, there are lots of resources on my website for people who are on this path. There are lots of people listed on the links page who are doing this kind of work, books that can be supportive. You know, we're not alone. We're all connected. That would be my best.
I think that's great advice, because when you are going to that very dark place, you really do forget that. And I think it's good to hear it. And this book that you've written really speaks to that. And it speaks to love, and it speaks to opening your heart. And I'm glad that you mentioned the resources guide on your website, because you really have some fantastic resources there. So we certainly encourage people to go to your website. And that's mythicheart.com?
Mythicheart.com, yes.
Okay, great.
Too, I would say that the part that you're not alone, I would extend that also to the people who, you know, were in the position like my brother, because I think that they need as much help as the people on this side. You know, it's the yin and the yang. It's all whole. We're brothers and sisters, regardless of what we're going through and, you know, what's happening in each life. So, you
that's a really good point, because I think that it would be, I mean, there comes that judgment again, right? It would really be easy to, when you get on a path of spirituality or higher consciousness, it would be really easy to trip over yourself and start pointing to others where they may not be conscious, or they may not be opening up to the process, or whatever. So that's interesting, mm-hmm. that you mentioned,
yeah.
that as well.
think we're all doing the best that we know how, given our life circumstances, and I think we all have the opportunity to grow no matter where we're at.
Good point, Michelle. Thank you so much for talking with us today. This really is a fantastic book, perfect timing, and I just really wish you much success with it, and I know that it will get into the hands that need to read it. So.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, you take care, and I hope to speak with you again.
Okay, me too. Thanks.
Take care. All right, listeners, there we go. I've been talking with Michelle Lewis, her new novel, Reaching Out from the Inside, From Spiritual Crisis to Dream Awakening. And this is going to be the first book in three books that she'll be writing on this topic of higher consciousness and awakening and the initiatory journey that we will all take. So I really encourage you to go to her website, mythicheart.com, and check out her and her book. It really is fantastic. So once again, thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.